You are now tuned in to the only place on the fucking earth, I swear to God, that is not 24/7 talking about goddamn Drake and Kendrick. The AR Sports Media, the week in wrestling. Funny though, because I just said that. Very hypocritical of me. True, I need some help. I could not possibly be more like out of touch with modern rap. So from that perspective, isn't Drake's whole thing that like he was a child actor and he ain't really built like that and had a pretty decent life and. But we just like yeah. people just let it slide because like, he's like a really talented rapper. Isn't that like his whole fucking thing?
Yeah.
So how the fuck does someone like that perpetrate like continue to prosecute a beef?
So okay, so for people who
you're
who,
like
who
exactly.
Don't, so brief overview for people who don't understand, because most wrestling fans who do listen to hip hop, especially the ones that are like on the timeline, they don't grasp that. Drake's background is that of a upper middle class Canadian man who grew up in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood with his mom, and his father was not around, so he had a summer or two in Memphis with his father, who is actually a very talented musician himself. That is what Drake's world is. Drake, however, in the last 5 or 6 years has become a mob boss and it's like, I got gangsters around me, which if anybody understands how it is when you become rich and you have money, you can buy any amount of people. You can get also extorted. I could get into the politics.
Let me tell you, let me tell you, when you want to get some money, you never run out of people who can see you as a good person to know. It's a person who can solve their problems for them.
And yep. When it comes down to it, I'll go there. I'm pretty sure there's a billionaire who probably looks at me as somebody who's trying to put my hand in his pocket. I am, but that's a little different. It's different between what you owe somebody and extortion. If I could tie the two things together, but. Once again, I think what it is, like I said, not to get too much into hip hop, because obviously this is, of course, our week in wrestling, but people need to understand, people creating images that is not who they are or playing this role, not who they really are.
He's
kind
of stuck. He's got to keep going, right?
You got to stick with it.
I guess that's the crux of the answer to my question. Like, I don't understand how somebody like that doesn't just play their role and.
And in a segue,
they got to do all this.
And in a segue to that, I guess we see in wrestling, there are a lot of people who have put themselves in a box almost, and you can't wiggle out of that box. Currently, that box to me is 703.
It's a wet box that is crumbling. You know, I wasn't even like when that happened, that number came out. And I was thinking about, hey, like, what are we going to do on the show? Honestly, like, at this point, I don't know. I don't know how much even excitement I get out of it anymore. Like, it's honestly, like, sad. Like, what they've done and what has happened to this thing that started off, like, so good and was doing all the things that it claimed to want to do. And the personal... They reflect so much of the personality of their fucking weirdo goofball ass fans that anybody who's not, you know, in the circle of the circle jerk is the enemy. So now you just got these. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were asking me what the fuck happened with Ethan Page? Where has Danhausen been? Where's Ricky Starks? And I had to explain to them where those people are and why. But hey, you know, you got Chris Jericho in trunks going two segments with Shibata in a garbage match that just fucking death. It was not as long as that goddamn match was and more enjoyable. You got that. You got best friends talking segments. Those are doing good, right?
You know, someone once told me a couple years ago, right, when I first signed my little deal to start working with AEW, almost 3 years ago now, right? Somebody told me, and they said, they better be glad they have CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole, Malakai Black, Andrade, Kenny Omega, and also Christian Cage at that time. He said they better be lucky they have these guys, because these guys are kind of hiding some of the issues. And I was like, what are, like because I was like, oh man, I love Kenny. I love Punk and Danielson and Cole, and I love these guys. I'm like, these guys are great. I'm like, I'm enjoying what I'm seeing on the television. He said, you got to go back a year or two to when it started and what their vision initially was. You had a Moxley and Omega, you know, feud starting out when Dynamite first hit television. But you also had this forcing of the Dark Order with terrible segments to close out the show sometimes. And we all know that one segment that was absolutely dreadful. And he said, that is the vision that they had starting out. That is their vision.
I want Cody to bring versus that up. And okay, so you're talking, you know, you're bringing up the name that I wanted to bring up. And that's what I told this person. I said, you think that the first sign, the first clear sign of all this was CM Punk? It wasn't. It was Cody.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen how fucking weird that has gotten in the last few weeks. Because now these people are throwing out all these timelines about, like, whoa, how much was Cody really involved in making this happen? And like trying to fucking act like trying to lessen the.
You know, I'm the last person. I'm the last person to take. I'm the last person to go take it for Cody. I'll say this. To me, Cody's a smart, cunning guy, right? When he first left WWE, I was there for his first indie match. I believe it was at Evolve. I forgot who he wrestled. I know that Cedric, my boy Cedric, was on that card. That's why I showed up there. And I'll never forget. I was like, man, Cody sucks. I said that then. I still say that now. But I was like, man, Cody sucks. He's like, he need to find something, because this no knee pad shit he doing, this ain't going to work. And he found something in the Bullet Club. Then he did attach himself to the Elite. But he also created something within the Elite himself, which that was the only time I found him mildly entertaining, was when he was working with the Elite at that time in the New Japan and the Ring of Honor stuff. He was stinking up the joint with Omega and Ibushi and other people. He was stinking up the joint match-wise. But FTR kind of owes Cody their, you know, owe him a lot. Because he was running with that Fuck the Revival shit and that, you know. And so I think Cody did that and took himself to a different level. And he put himself in the forefront next to guys who were already growing. And then what happens is, without a Cody Rhodes, I don't feel like you have AEW in the way that it was. But also, I also think, the real number one reason why AEW exists, and I see everyone pat Cody on the back and give Cody the credit. I see everyone give the Young Bucks credit. But if you really ask me, the number one reason why AEW exists is Kenny Omega. That is how I see it. That is how I've always felt. Because what Kenny Omega did in New Japan and those Okada matches and the G1, and he wrestled Chris Jericho, and that was the match that put, I think, people will notice that, hey, we can have an alternative. There is no AEW, in my opinion, without Kenny Omega being the best bout machine, putting those classics on, because I did not give a shit about what Cody Rhodes did. I didn't even give a shit about what the Young Bucks did. When AEW got announced and Kenny Omega showed up at that press conference, I was like, I'm in. When people were like, oh, Chris Jericho, oh, Cody, oh, Young Bucks, Hangman Page, didn't really care. When Kenny was on board, I was like, yo, that's it. That's the guy. That's my guy. He was the wrestler of the year, arguably, for like three years in a row. He was the guy. he couldn't even carry Cody to a good match. It's very tough for me to go back to those dark times. But, and remember, I mean, you were there. You were there for it. Madison Square Garden, 2019, New Japan Ring of Honor. That place was damn near basically sold out. But you know why? Because of what the Elite had done, and those tickets sold out months in advance. Them not being there put a damper kind of on the show. That, to me, said that's who the draw is, but Kenny Omega was the draw. I didn't want to go to see Young Bucks and Cody. I wanted to go see, yo, Kenny Omega live. I got to see that. So I think when people give Cody, we give Cody too much credit. I agree with people who's giving Cody too much credit, but also he is a part of it too. He is the reason. I think I don't like Cody saying I started this or I did this, or it's a collective effort. But
well, the point is that you got these fucking weirdos on the AEW side trying to act like he wasn't a fucking part of it, and it really wasn't that.
But they loved him
and trying to. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying though. Even when you're in the fucking Treehouse of Trust. Even when you're in the circle jerk, if you fucking move yourself out of it just a little bit, then motherfuckers are going to start acting like you, trying to erase you. Because that's how clown shit it is around.
Don't I know that one?
Don't you Ooh. Know? Yeah.
Ooh.
I had, you know, these fucking weirdos and their feelings. This has become our weekly segment, my weekly interaction with the goofiest motherfuckers on earth.
Eric's interacting with weirdos.
Yeah, that's a weird, you know, thing. They posted old boy. They posted old boy, the new arena guy, new guy who's in charge of live events.
Yeah,
posted his picture of, you know, the rodeo. He did. He was in the PBR before, ran the PBR event, live events stuff. And it showed a picture of the rodeo on the side of the arena full. And I just retweeted, joking, you know, little joke. There's a grown man who's held the backside of a titty one time or twice in his fucking life. It's what we do. We joke around, little jabs at each other. Saying, whoa, I hope you enjoyed what the arena looked like there on the left. Because that shit's over for you now. Which, factual, AEW still doesn't even open the top half of the fucking arena right now, let alone do more than 3,000 fans. Just a little joke. Let's see some of the fun reactions I had. I had one person say, oh, well, you just have an agenda, and reposted that we're merchandise affiliates, you know, with WWE and NFL and NBA. Cool. Go ahead and just direct me to the merchandise affiliate program for AEW real quick.
Not that we.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to because it doesn't fucking exist. You fucking idiot. You fucking goofball. There's that one. Another one where this guy was like, oh, well, you're the worst piece of shit in the world because you went out of your way to shit on this guy being excited about this project that he's working on. And then that person immediately went to my page and started shitting on the podcasts and the videos and all that stuff. No one cares. You're a failure. You're this and that. So literally, the typical AEW cultist hypocrite, which, by the way, this person also had his own YouTube page whose subscriber count and views were absolutely fucking dwarfed by everything that DAR is involved in, of course. But I didn't bring it up because it don't fucking matter, really. Right is right and wrong is wrong. None of that shit. I'm not that type of person, right? Which, by the way, if the first thing you do is in an argument is jump on that person's personal page and start trying to pick out things to fuck with them about, I already know you ain't got shit to say. I already know you're fucking wrong and you have no point. You have no fucking life. My favorite. This can't be real, but you know what? And I didn't even ask him to elaborate because I was trying to help this guy save himself from himself. It was. So my quote said, I hope you liked those arenas looking the way they did over there on the left. And this was a person of color with AEW stuff all over their page. And he said, well, what the fuck do you mean by that? I think implying that this was like a racial thing I was saying?
I truly hope that wasn't the case, because...
Well, it seemed to be. First of all, as someone who grew up around and in rodeo culture, there is a lot of Hispanic and Black people who are involved in the rodeo and attend the rodeo. So I don't know what the fuck you're talking about there. Was that?
I said, I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It might not be, you know, in the Northeast, that sounds crazy, but like in the Southwest, in Northern California, Nevada, Texas, that's not a surprise at all for anybody from there who's listened to this. That's normal. That's fucking ridiculous. And second, obviously I was referring to the amount of people who were in the arena as compared to that's how fucking delusional and out to fucking lunch these people fucking are. So delusional that they were probably very comfortable to, oh, well, it was all because of the West Coast thing last week, right? That 682, I mean, it was all just because of the West Coast thing. It's not because the show was fucking dog shit and less people every week are watching it. You know, we got all this great publicity off the NFL draft and of Tony Khan going on there and acting like a fucking wild-eyed goofball all over fucking a serious fucking operation TV show. I bet that was a comfortable, lovely week. Just imagining that all those problems were going to be solved until that 703 smacked them in the face this week.
Life sucks. And then you die. Really, I mean, it's really not much to say about it. So I didn't get a chance to really pay attention too much to Dynamite because I don't care to watch it like that. I mean, you know, I'm not sitting through Jericho going out there in his trunks with his left titty like bouncing every time. It's just not something. I will say this. I think what they're doing with the women's division in AEW is actually pretty solid. I love anything that Toni Storm and Mariah May.
So after your part here, I was going to come back. I was going to let you, you know, drop an elbow, but it looks like you're already done because this is.
So we can't hurt them
any more than they already are hurting themselves. So we'll go ahead and move to the positive part of this, which was.
No, I'm still gonna be negative. I'm still gonna be negative here. I'm getting the positive out the way before I.
Mariah May and Serena Deeb was fucking awesome. So Mariah, that was a fucking awesome match of the week. Absolutely, like goddamn it, Mariah May is so fucking good. Holy shit, goddamn.
I can say so many things about Mariah May. She is amazing. She looks amazing. She is an amazing performer, wrestler, character, personality. She is just great at what she does. I think AEW is probably the best fit for her, but there is a part of me that, you know, there's like that one part of me that's like, man, she has so much, you know, so much, she has so much personality. I wonder what she would have done elsewhere. But, you know, I don't know if elsewhere would have given her the creative freedom that, I mean, maybe they would have now. I can't really say, but
I'd be surprised if that day didn't come.
Oh, at some point it will, for sure.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because,
oh yeah.
Well, you know, if you can be seen in front of, you know, 3, 4, 5, 20, 50 million people that have Netflix subscriptions on Raw versus 700,000 people and 2,000 people in the stands. I would probably take that choice and probably make, you know, but I think WWE doesn't understand acts that come from different places initially. There's like a barrier for them. They don't get it. But watching Mariah May on television now, there's no way you don't get it.
I think it's less and less as the months go by too with this new regime.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the new regime, despite their flaws, and they're definitely flawed over there in WWE with some of the things they do, but I think they're starting to grasp, hey, we can get so much goodwill by doing the things that that company over there used to kind of do and they don't really do anymore. And that's kind of the issue, is that the reason why WWE's the hottest it's been in so long, and right now they're not even, to me, they're not even like super hot right now, because they're, it's like the things that made them super hot, that not angles really have kind of cooled right off, you know, yeah. And like Punk and Drew are probably the best thing they have going, is back and forth, but they're both like hurt and injured and not wrestling right now. And then, you know, Roman and Brock are obviously out there. I think Cody and AJ, pretty cool deal, and I wish they had more time to kind of lean into some more of their history and kind of get them a little bit more.
That's for all you stopwatch goofballs out there. The best fucking angle going in wrestling right now is between two guys who can't fucking touch each other. Hello.
It's crazy. And I guess that's the thing too, is like when you look at AEW and look at what they do, what's bringing me in to care about your program? I don't think they've done the best job with Swerve so far as champion these couple weeks.
I am, however, fucking ecstatic about Swerve Christian fucking feud. Hopefully, like I said, I laid out last week, I hope that like the Young Bucks stack the deck, because wasn't it, I've missed like the very first part of it, but Swerve was referring to what the Elite did as some bitch ass shit.
Yeah.
So I hope they like, I mean, like I said, man, there's a way that would be fun to do this where the Bucks do that thing, you know, like shitty bosses where like they passive aggressively act like that's not a big deal, but then they start doing little shit to fuck with him. And, you know, they somehow the match becomes where Killswitch and Nick Wayne can be involved in the match, you know what I mean? And make it almost insurmountable for Swerve, and we'll see if he can get out of it. All with Christian doing his thing. It's going to be a fucking excellent match, too. I'm fucking excited about that.
If
you're going to have a scenario where it's almost fucking guaranteed that Swerve's, you know, obviously not going to lose the belt on his first defense, this is all just about as good as you could possibly come up with, other than maybe making this send off for Malakai Black or something, you know what I mean? But so that also seems to be taking place in the undercard. But yeah, this is like the best, to me, this is the best case scenario for where Swerve's at right now and the plan for him.
Well, so I think the problem is, it's funny, right? So both Swerve and Cody are the new champions for their respective companies, and their first title defense are against grizzled veterans who are long-standing history, and both TNA legends in their own right. So I think the interesting part of this is, I'm not that big on this Christian versus Swerve thing, because I feel like Swerve needed like a out-the-park big name opponent. The issue with that is there's no out-the-park big name opponent in AEW right now, because everything is cold as fucking ice. So Christian provides something of a veteran who can help put Swerve over, who can give him a great feud, give him a lot of back and forth. And now Swerve say he's going to have help with him. I think there's a way to, like you've mentioned, tie in the Elite into some of this. And, you know, Omega and Swerve having some sort of alliance at some point with against the Elite and all that. There's a thing there, Christian aligning kind of with them as like, oh, they're the new bosses and they're running things and I got them in my back pocket. There's a lot of stuff there that they could do that'll be kind of exciting. I guess I'm just not sold, because I said we gotta see who can they make next to Swerve next, and we don't have really anybody that they can really make, because everybody, like, the scariest thing about all of this is that he could beat Christian and then end up going into the summer and feuding with like Jericho or some shit, because that is like the trajectory that he's on. It's like you beat one Canadian and you go to the next. I don't really see any other person in line that is like a heel, unless you go Jack Perry. And I don't really want to see that. Or you can go Okada. I think Okada challenging for the championship would be great, but Okada is not. Door. Yeah, but I don't think Okada wants – I don't know if they want Okada to take that loss yet. I don't really know yet. I don't know. Yeah, true. We'll see. So, like, once again, that's the problem you run into with booking these guys so strongly, is that your top dogs, you don't want to have them take a loss, so you can't put this dream match of Swerve and Okada with Swerve stepping up to him and ain't nobody scared of you, boy. There's and I'm not scared of y'all. Y'all some bitches, and that you can have this whole thing, and I defy authority, anti-hero type of thing going on, and I think that's what works better for Swerve if he was presented as this, fuck the authority type shit, and let me, I'm coming at everybody. That works with Okada. It does not work. It works with Jack Perry, but it doesn't work to me because I don't want to see that shit. But it's just not. It's something missing to me with what they got going on.
There's so many guys they have that they could build up in short order to make them credible, entertaining challengers, but could afford to take a loss. Where is Brody King? They've wasted the fucking Wardlow thing and made it into fucking nothing. That could have been a great person to build up and put against him with some backing from the guys behind him. Where the fuck is Daniel Garcia?
I was thinking about that. Where is good old Mike?
Well, we know where Ricky Starks is. But that would have been another one that they decided, nah, we'll fucking.
So this is the issue that I have.
You know
is
who is the perfect guy for this, and they've just never used him in this way. They never use Miro like that. You could throw Miro in right now. He could kill people for 5 weeks. Challenge
for a couple reasons for that.
You'd be like, we know that, but there's reasons for those reasons. We got to that point through a series of events. You know what I mean?
Well, I think Miro's still kind of hurt.
Now they've also lost the opportunity.
I think Miro's still kind of hurt. I haven't heard the updates, but he's battling multiple nagging injuries. So I think that's a part of it. But even with that, I think Swerve versus Ricky Starks
to me as was much as food. People jump all over the dick of how people ladies in NXT tear their ACLs. It seems like every fucking conversation we have like this are like, oh well, that person's hurt, that person's hurt, that person's hurt, that person's hurt. People hurt a lot in AEW.
And I won't even want to use that because it's wrestling, right? Everybody, everybody struggles. Everybody gets hurt. That's just the nature of the game, nature of the business.
Well, it's not really what I'm getting at.
But I get what you're saying. But I'll say this. For people who thought Ricky Starks was hurt and that's why he was out.
Nope, he's not.
He's not. If you ask, I can't speak to how Ricky feels about not being utilized. But I can tell you what. Swerve is champion. Ricky Starks could be a face. He could be a heel. He was recently a heel with Big Bill. I think there's no better time than to if you're going to reheat Ricky Starks up. We saw what Ricky Starks can do when he was given a shot against MJF in that really short program. We saw what Ricky Starks can do when he was
that
out there with
Big
Bill.
That would
have
been the time. Little Shawn Michaels Diesel situation. Big Bill with him. Heat him up. Give him a shot.
And Ricky Another Starks guy. Is just, yeah, I think Swerve and Starks, there's history there too. Yes. There's some history there, some previous bad blood that people, do know about, they don't necessarily
get along. Another guy that they were building up and then just dropped off the face of the fucking earth, Takeshita would be a fucking awesome, brought him out there one time fucking challenger.
Yeah, keep Don Callis out the way if we can. But yeah, no, I agree. I think the thing that I don't like about Swerve's title reign is that it just feels like a placeholder for August. That's really what it feels like, and I don't like the verbiage that I hear from people because it's like, oh, we got to get Swerve versus Ospreay. Ospreay's on Swerve's podcast, and he's like, oh, I'm coming for that belt. And
what's
it's almost
crazy
just like
yeah. about it is. Is the way that AEW has dealt with their championships, there's definitely a clear path to sending Ospreay towards Edge in the TNT title in the main event of that show. There's a clear path. This would be interesting. send Ospreay at Okada for that belt, for the Continental belt. Continental belt's only had two holders. Mm-hmm. One of them's Okada. He's going to this big, strong run. That belt, you could make the perception of that to be right up there next to the world title. Like, you could. There's ways to do this, right? And Ospreay versus Okada is a very, very interesting, unique matchup, for especially for the Western audience. I'm not sure. Somebody will probably correct me. If it's happened before in Japan, I'm sure it has. But
it has. It has.
Yeah. Okay. But like, Western audiences haven't fucking seen that. And that's one guy on the rise and one guy who's like a god. Like, that's a good way to put him over.
Well, for August, Okada's gonna be busy. For August, Okada's gonna be busy, and I think we clearly see where Okada's gonna be busy. I'm pretty sure Kenny Omega will be cleared to get back to wrestling. I mean, he's clear for physical contact, obviously, or he wouldn't have taken part in.
Clearly.
Yeah, so I don't think he's not cleared 100% for wrestling yet, but I'm pretty sure, just like they did with the Mercedes Moné thing and bringing her in months before she was cleared, but I think Forbidden Door, July-ish, is when Omega will be fully cleared, and I think you're going to run, I think Omega will be at Forbidden Door. I don't think he'll actually wrestle, but I think he'll make an appearance, and I think that'll lead to the all-in Okada Omega, finally get to see it on, this side and get another classic or whatever they make magic together. So that's great. But I think Swerve's reign, after he beats Christian, who's next? That's the tough part. So, and then also, Ospreay is like a face now. So, are we doing face versus face heading into All In when that does happen? There's a couple months between then and now, but we're in May already, and that's August. So, it doesn't feel like Swerve is going to get that extended run, and it's just like, we want Ospreay to be the guy. That's the face of the company. That's the guy.
The absolute, to me, the best fucking possible combination. You have Ospreay go after Edge or Okada for one of those belts at that show. You know who would be a great person to have go against fucking Swerve in front of that big crowd?
I know where you're going with this.
Hangman.
I know where you're going with this.
Hangman,
I don't
want to
see them wrestle. I don't want to see them wrestle.
And then they have their fucking last match. The blow off to me, right up there with Punk and MJF at that point, would be the greatest rivalry ever in AEW. Like last year, we kind of complained about the no booking. There's no stuff doesn't feel big at this show. Both of those, if you did a double main with the blow off to Hangman and Swerve, where Swerve defends the AEW title, plus you have the hometown boy going after either Okada or Edge, to gods of the arena. I think that would be a fitting. Fitting double main event to put in front of 50,000 people.
So I see where you're coming from. I personally don't want to see Swerve a Hangman fight ever again. Personally,
come on, Will Washington. You know you want to do it. Now we're on the same side. We're allied now. We're allies now on this. Come on. You know you want to do it. One more. Blow this thing off properly.
So, Let me word this the right way. Let's make sure I word this the right way. I think Will and Tony and all the other guys that are in AEW would absolutely love another Swerve versus Hangman match. I don't think All In is where they're looking at. But I will say this. There's always a chance that if Swerve does lose to Ospreay at All In, it will have some tie into Hangman, and you could see a all-out situation where Swerve loses the belt and fights Hangman at All Out in like some type of insane stipulation match or something like that. I could see that. Not that I know, not that I know for sure. I mean, a couple things that I know. Also, I want to point out, I knew and called it out several times about Camille being signed to AEW, which has been the worst kept secret in her circle.
Well, you either knew because you knew, or you knew because she said she'd been signed for since February and she hasn't fucking done anything yet. So either one of those things is a very clear fucking sign that she signed with
when AEW. She announced.
Hey, does anybody know what the judge and EJ and Duka is up to these days? I haven't seen him for like a fucking year. Megan Bain.
I saw him.
Oh, she's been like for.
I saw EJ backstage at Wale Mania, and several people said, "Hey, man, when you gonna be on TV?" And I can't say what he said because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But let's just say it don't look like it's happening no time soon. So I mean, a lot of people.
That was the clear sign that Camille had signed with AEW. She hasn't been on TV in fucking months. She's been.
Well, I think not. There. I think we knew.
You know what? At least we got Chris Jericho in the trunks, having a garbage match with a guy who can't take bumps. Fucking great idea.
You know. So once again. There's so many good things about AEW. I personally did like the Young Bucks, Okada, Jack Perry, Omega ending. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it
worked. No, that was a good segment to end that show. Absolutely.
Now, once again, the problem with AEW is once they get a good segment, they don't know how to follow it up and can keep the consistency. But I think there is something. Double or Nothing, to me, is the make or break moment. You have Willow versus Mercedes. You got Christian versus Swerve. On paper, so far, it's good. Unfortunately, FTR came to Omega's aid.
Times you've said that in the last few months. Now this pay-per-view is the make or break. And then we're back saying it again.
The reason why I say that is because the pay-per-views are good.
Yeah.
And then they don't fight. Like, but what's happening is when I say make or break, if you're barely putting 2,000 people into the arenas and barely hitting 680 and 700, your only best bet is that the NBA playoffs will be off by June. NHL playoffs will be off, so nobody will have shit to watch. And then naturally, you know, your attendance will probably go up in the summertime because, you know, Wednesdays, kids not in school, so maybe kids want to go. But what's your excuse when WWE on a random Monday or random Friday can pack 12,000 to 13,000 people and you can't even get like 3,000 or 4,000? They did have a good amount of people, I think, in Canada, not like 4,000 or 5,000. Yeah. I don't know, but
I mean, but a good amount, yeah. But they're still not opening the top deck of the building.
And it's just like, I'm accepting that AEW will never get back to where they were. When Punk first arrived and they started doing like 7,000, 8,000 and 6,000 on a regular basis, and you know, people's expectations for them went up higher. When in reality, your expectations should be for them as a clear number two that is not making any movement and gaining ground. And that's okay. They don't have to, right? I think if you accept being a number two, being a quote-unquote alternative, that they don't really look like an alternative recently. But, you know, AEW is doing what they do. I'm not going to say doing what they do best, because that would be a lie. But they're doing what they do. And whether it works or not, we'll see. It's like, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Nope. But working. Yeah,
WWE had a pretty ho hum week this week. A little bit of a holding pattern. Draft, nothing.
Post Mania sucks, man.
Particularly sucks. Interesting. I mean, Backlash is usually a pretty rocking show. Has been over the years.
Not this one.
And a couple of times when it was Extreme. I mean, it could be one of those shows that surprises you. You know,
Cody and AJ should be great.
By the time you're listening to this, the show will probably be over. But there's plenty of ingredients. You know, like, for instance, everybody knows WWE's Canadian Stampede 97. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. If you didn't
love that show,
know how fucking legendary the show was, though, and you just looked at the card, and you're like, it's a 10-man tag for the fucking main event, and it's you know what I'm saying? Like, you would not look at that card and think that was one of the greatest wrestling shows that's ever been put on. But the ingredients are here, right? I'm sure AJ and Cody are going to go fucking crazy. They're probably going to give them a lot of time. The crowd is probably going to be fucking ridiculous. They were amazing for SmackDown. LA Knight, how long are we going to wait, guys? If he is not beating Logan Paul for that belt at fucking SummerSlam, I don't even know. I don't know. I guess they just don't want it for him. I don't know what else to do like in that situation.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. WWE cannot get out of their own way sometimes. They will. There's a guy who's naturally over. If you're not handpicked or a guy that they personally like, or you've not gone through a bunch of adversity of like, oh, he's lost 30,000 times. Now people are really behind him now. They have to get off of that bullshit. LA Knight is one of those guys. And when you have one of those guys, put the motherfuckers in a spot. But like I've said before, I'll say it again. LA Knight is like 40, 41, something like that. And people are like, oh, he's too old. He's so old. Cody just finished his story. He's knocking on 40. Most of these guys that are in the top spots are knocking on 40, or they are 40 already. Give him a shot. Give him a chance.
For all of wrestling history, these people don't realize this. 35 to 45 is your prime. That is your prime.
Huh?
So, right, you might be able to not quite flip quite as far, but you know how to take care of yourself physically. You know how to the psychology. You know how to tell stories. You know how to fucking what works for you to keep your physique in the place that it needs to be by that point. Like, that's when you have the mental and the physical come together. It's 35 to 45 for these guys. But,
well, we'll see. Like I said, I'm ready for LA Knight. Like, I'm ready for LA Knight to get some type of something. He's been knocking it out the park. He's still over. Every time you put a mic in front of him, he cooking. I don't know what more you really need to see and put a belt on that man, or give him, hell, if you want to even give him a build him up to the Royal Rumble for next year and start him off with a U.S. title, or start him off with something like that. I mean, you're giving Ricochet a made up belt, and you're giving other people these belts. I mean, give my guy Damian Priest is your fucking world heavyweight champion. LA Knight is extremely over. You can put him in some type of positions. I said LA Knight should have been. I didn't see if they actually drafted him or not. I didn't really pay attention to it. But LA Knight should, to me, be on Raw. And I would not be against LA Knight being the guy that had beat Damian Priest. I know Jey Uso is not going to do it.
Because so, what can't LA Knight do as the lead on your show? If he's the champion, he can carry a program. He can go out there and do the mic work. He can carry those talking angles. He can,
and we saw
he can badass he can, matches.
Yeah, we've seen it. So
how the fuck is maybe the guy he just who lost that match? Who the fuck? How the fuck is the guy who lost that match at Mania in the world title match? Well, because he beat LA Knight. I know qualifying, but what I'm saying as far as booking wise,
doesn't make sense.
How do you take this guy and acknowledge how over he is and give him a win at Mania, but then he's doing fucking nothing the next month, other than getting earth-shattering fucking pops like goddamn, oh well, that's sacrilege. Like Jesus has come back from fucking heaven for the rapture. These motherfuckers are cheering for this guy when he walks out. That's all he's doing now. Meanwhile, AJ
that Thomas ovation on SmackDown was crazy,
fucking ridiculous. That Stone Cold Steve Austin insane. Shit. So
in. He was outselling. So I'm gonna say, this is the last thing I'm gonna say on this. WWE always does things that brings out the conspiracy theorists in me sometimes, and doesn't take very much to bring that up. But I was like, yo, every time there's a guy who starts to outperform the guy that they want to push as their guy, they start to like dwell, you know, like try to dim your light a little bit. And LA Knight was number one merch seller for a while. He was doing this, and then all of a sudden he got pushed back. And they were like, okay, bring Cody back up, because Cody fell to like number five, number six. And then Rock, remember Rock came back, and Rock was outselling everybody. And it's like, no, got to bring Cody back up. And like, don't get me wrong, I know Cody's super over, he's super popular, whatever. That's not taken away from him. But it's if you're not the guy that they have handpicked or they picked themselves, they will not push you the right way, and they will kind of push you back like, hey. No, stay. No, like you're good, but no, we saw it with Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn was super over, and they said, okay, we're gonna blow this off at Montreal, give him a loss and not make it super competitive match, and he's gonna lose, and then we're gonna give him a main event though for tag team titles, and that'll be a great way to end his story. And it's just like, that's cool. It worked out, I guess, but it was still like, because you had handpicked your guy already, you can't give any, you can't push anybody in front of the guy you already picked already. And I think that's not only an issue with WWE, but also a AEW issue too. I think it's a wrestling issue where if the people who are in charge like the people that they want to push, if somebody else supersedes that, they will not give you what you're trying to earn or what you are earning. And that's all I could say on that front.
You gotta hope that it starts to change as the wrestling world evolves with new leadership. Make the trade. WWE by SummerSlam. I need to see LA Knight on Raw going for that belt against Damian Priest at SummerSlam. And I need to see Chad Gable in charge of his stable with the Creed brothers, which is clearly coming. It's taking a little too fucking long for me, because honestly, it's wasting the time. I think all three people in that group have potential to do more. Clearly, from whenever he gets the opportunity, Akira Tozawa can do more. I've always liked Big Boy. What's his name? God damn it.
Otis?
Otis. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. I've always liked fucking Otis. I always thought he could do more. He's got crazy charisma like no one else. He can move. He has a lot that he could fucking do, legit credentials. And you said you probably didn't get to watch Raw, right?
Nah, I haven't watched. I didn't watch any wrestling this week, honestly.
Anybody who did see this is going to know what I'm talking about. I thought it was hilarious. It's almost like they were like, hey, we know how to make it so it looks like Maxine can work. She can just go out there and actually beat the shit out of people. And then, there's no holes in it. Because it was kind of like back when Roman was like struggling to get over. And they're like, hey, you know what you guys could do? Go out there and actually fucking hit each other. Then people will be like, whoa, this is crazy. That's kind of what happened on Monday. She went out there and had a match with Candice LeRae where she, like, it looked pretty good, but it was because it was all stiff as fuck. It was fucking hilarious. But I think all three of those people, Maxine included, could be doing better than what this angle, and I understand they need to do this angle to progress where it's all going, but I would like it for Chad Gable and for the three other people involved, for this thing to wrap up sooner than later. So I need to see that too. I need Chad Gable in charge of the Creeds doing badass shit. And I need LA Knight on Raw going for that World Heavyweight Championship. There's no trading us here on DAR Sports Media. 4 drops per week. We got Football Fridays where we review the wildness that happened with the Atlanta Falcons in the NFL draft. Of course, Hooping and Hollering is a fun time every week right now because the playoffs are absolutely cracking and are amazing. Real, real awesome playoffs so far this year. And then on Mondays, we got United Football Media, the UFL. If you're deeply missing football, tune into the UFL. It's on Saturdays and Sundays. Fox, ESPN, ABC, the like. United, it's the former XFL and USFL. They've united, come up with a football league. United Football League, and we do a Sports Center type show for the United Football Media, the number one media group covering spring football, and that comes out Mondays on YouTube. Check it out. As you can see, the world of DAR, it never stops.